My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the Deceptively Fast Podcast. My name is Seth Payne. I played 10 years in the NFL. I now host a radio show in Houston on Sports Radio 610, where obviously we talk a whole lot about football. So on the podcast, we talk a lot about football, but more on the human side of things. I don't break down the technical stuff as much. We try to get into the interesting, what was it like to be a player then and now, and all of that other good stuff. I bring on my friend Drew Hodgson once a week, and he's on today. He played collegiately at Arizona State, played in the NFL for a few years, and he's a really interesting and funny guy. So I encourage you to subscribe, leave a 5-star review. That would help out a lot if you so choose. If you want to reach out to me personally, my direct messages are open on Twitter at Seth C. Payne or Instagram at Seth C. Payne. Enjoy the show. There's not a whole lot going on in the NFL right now, other than the fact that there's teams embroiled in playoff hunts and whatnot. I see that Indianapolis has decided not to show the scores in the stadium during their game because they don't want the players to be distracted by potentially knowing what the outcomes of other games are. I don't know. I feel like this is a little bit overblown. And yet, as a player, I don't think it would bother me at all.
I don't know. I mean, I can appreciate it because there's always one guy who is easily distracted by those things on every team I've ever been on. There was always a guy who did. So I can see it, but
that's a really good point, actually, because all it takes is one guy that won't shut up about it on the bench.
Right.
It's like looking up at the clock and be like, oh, wow. Did you see Tennessee just scored on Houston? That's the only game, because those are both late afternoon games. So I think that's the one game that people would be scoreboard watching.
They could actually impact it, right?
I don't know. You know what? Okay, now that I'm thinking about my own experiences, I could see me being that guy that got distracted.
It's tough because I think sometimes you reminisce and you live in your own mind about it and you go, yeah, everyone was just thinking the exact same way I was and was not thinking about it. And then you stop and you really recount all the teammates you ever had. And then you think like, nah, there were a lot of idiots on my team.
I mean, everybody was all over the place with everything. Like, there was a documentary about the 93 Oilers, and there was all kinds of drama and stuff going on. That was the year that, you know, Buddy Ryan punched Kevin Gilbride. And they interviewed, I think it was Warren Moon that said, you know what, honestly, until people interviewed me about this stuff 20 years later, I didn't have a clue any of this was going on. It was just all, there's so many dramas that go on, and a football team is so big. You're right. I think people on the outside might think that it's like a high school football movie where everybody gets out and goes to the kegger on Friday nights and you're all best buds and everything. It's not like that at all. Everybody's off in their own little cliques, and some guys are older with families and some guys are young and jackasses.
Well, it's interesting, too, because even though they really do come from all sorts of different backgrounds and all walks of life, I mean, you find a way to make it work because you're so competitive and you understand that the best scenario is for all of us to just, you know, put all that stuff aside and just be cohesive as a unit. So you always find a way to kind of make it work, even though there's guys like from the deep, deep South and then like Pacific Northwest and, you know, racial boundaries and all that stuff. But I mean, you know, as soon as you get off the field, it's like we're not all hanging out.
I had the hardest time understanding what people like kids from rural Georgia were talking about. And it wasn't like, it didn't matter if they were white or black. It was just thinking about like the big melting pot. Kids from rural Georgia, it's almost unintelligible, which is weird because because people in Atlanta sound like they might as well be from Pennsylvania. You know, like they know people from Atlanta, a lot of them you'd never guess they're from the South. Then you get to Tifton, Georgia. It's like, dude, I don't know. Are you Scottish? What are you even?
That's Gaelic.
Yeah.
That's Gaelic. I did not see that coming. Right.
The other story that came out just this afternoon was Terrell Owens was on this Bleacher Report video. I think it's a Facebook Live series with Master Testosalon. I don't know who Master Testosalon is, but you can check it out on the Bleacher Report. But do you remember the old story of Donovan McNabb and how he supposedly was throwing up on that final touchdown drive in the Super Bowl? Because there were people, it was a final touchdown drive that put them within reach, but they still would have had a score again. But the criticism was that they weren't running a hurry up offense. They took way too much time off the clock.
Right.
And there was a story that Donovan McNabb was like almost throwing up in the huddle, that he was dry heaving in the huddle. And Donovan McNabb has come out and said, no, I was just, I wasn't. Look, there's no film of that. A couple of his teammates said that it looked like he might be dry heaving or something. I think Brian Westbrook said he was just coughing. So there's all kinds of stories about what he was or wasn't doing in the huddle, but it did seem like his conditioning might have been an issue. So Terrell Owens comes out on this show on Facebook today and says that, yeah, he was throwing up and it's because he was out drinking the night before the game, which I can't imagine is going over splendidly well in Philadelphia, because Donovan McNabb already has kind of a weird relationship with the city of Philadelphia. Do you believe Terrell Owens when he comes out with something like this? I feel like if it was Brian Westbrook or somebody coming out with this, then I might really raise my eyebrows. I don't know if I can trust T.O. on this. Can I?
No, you can't. No. I mean, has anything good ever come out of Facebook Live? I feel like I've only ever seen headlines related to Facebook Live that have to do with something horrible. So that's one. And then two, has anybody ever had like less credibility than Terrell Owens? Like he's not getting called to the stand.
He's got no ethics about the stuff that he said either.
Exactly.
Like with Jeff Garcia, remember he kind of hinted that about Jeff Garcia's sexuality, like really messed up stuff to be airing out in public. The only thing he ever did honorable before towards one of his quarterbacks was to be teary-eyed in defense of Tony Romo.
Which came off more like it was about him and his own need for attention than anything
else. Yeah, that was a whole lot of look at me, look at how noble I am.
Yeah, he was like I'm crying hard on camera.
He was like a guy defending a woman on the internet even before.
He was
knighting Tony Romo, right? Like he was like, hey, look at me. And then in the hopes that he would look good and then maybe he'd get a few more balls thrown his way. I guess the one thing I would wonder about, let's say that there is some truth to this though. Let's see. He was like John Ritchie and Lito Shepherd have gone on record saying that McNabb was suffering from dry heaves or vomiting. There's no video evidence that exists. Hank Fraley, remember him? Honey Buns Fraley, the center.
All of it.
He said in an interview the day after the game that McNabb was almost puking due to two large hits from Teddy Bruschi and Jarvis Green on back-to-back plays.
Oh, that's a very different narrative. That's going from you're hungover and throwing up to you're so tough you didn't even acknowledge the damage your brain took.
McNabb himself denies that he really was vomiting or dry heaving during the final drive. Westbrook later claimed that McNabb was merely coughing. I guess it's a shame for Donovan McNabb that any of this even comes out. I feel like there are other quarterbacks, and I say it's a shame for him. I feel like it's almost it's an indictment of his leadership ability that any teammates would even do that. Like, I feel like if Joe Montana could be vomiting actual whiskey in the huddle, and none of his teammates would have ever said a thing about it.
Right. And that's kind of it, right, is that it comes down to it's just a little bizarre that anyone would out you in that way. If it were only T.O., but you said there's a couple other guys that have kind of hinted at it too. And then he also has kind of, I mean, I don't want to not necessarily a rumor monger per se, but he was in Phoenix and all through, even when I was in college at ASU, like he would float around there because he would train there in the offseason in Scottsdale. And he always just kind of had a little bit of there was like a funny energy around him. No.
Oh, McNabb. Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. Like out in Old Town.
Hanging out in with the college kids type of thing.
Yeah.
Well, this is what I wonder. Because, and this is going to sound weird, but if McNabb were a guy who habitually drank the night before games, That's not desirable. And yet, I know at least one really good quarterback who like had serious alcohol issues who drank, supposedly it was told to me that he drank pretty hardcore like every night of the week and every night before the game. I didn't play with him. It was nobody tried to do the math. So I like, if that were true, and I suspect that it is true with this quarterback, that's almost like, okay, well that guy's got a serious problem. I could see McNabb being the guy that didn't habitually drink the night before games, but because of the moment, either like kind of lost his judgment and did something crazy or was like so stressed out that's why he drank.
Right. Yeah.
Am I wrong in being like more dismissive of somebody that like,
making light of a potentially devastating dysfunctional relationship between success and alcohol abuse?
Well, no, okay, no. I've drank the night before big events before when I knew I shouldn't be drinking. Never a football game, but like other things. Well, I drank the night before the first time I ever ran a marathon, I drank the night before it because I was like, I was staying in a hotel room and I was like, well, this, I just can't sit around here all night and do nothing. So I got a six pack and drank it. It's like, that was really dumb.
What am I supposed to do? Not destroy my body before a physical event?
I felt like it would relax me, and I wanted to be sure I could sleep.
Did it work?
It wasn't. No, I don't. I ran a slow marathon at 280 pounds. So yeah, I don't think it worked at all. I think it was really dumb to do. But I never would have done it. I never would have done it before a football game. Or anything else. Like the marathon, I kind of just wanted to finish it. So it wasn't
I guess is the question that, you know, we're bemoaning the fact that he may have consistently done that to try
I'd be
to
cool with that.
Better or is, yeah, right.
Okay. No, I'm serious. Not a big, okay. Yeah. It's not what you should do. It's really bad to do, but if it were a habitual thing, then that's what you've dealt with the whole time. Versus if you all of a sudden are freaking out and you're like, oh, it's a Super Bowl and I'm losing my mind. And all of a sudden that's the night you decide to start drinking.
Right.
That's where I feel like that's more of an indictment of your ability to withstand stress or pressure. And I say that as somebody that just admitted to drinking a six pack the night before a marathon.
I say that as someone who collapsed under the pressure of a marathon. The night before.
A marathon that nobody was going to be watching. There was absolutely nobody even knew I was running. I think I was more just, I was drinking a lot back then, Drew. It wasn't, I think I had just been reading a book about some Navy SEAL that was like running marathons and those guys would go out boozing and then show up there like hockey players. The hockey players I hung out with in college, I would drink with them until 4:30 in the morning, and they'd have like a 5:30 a.m. workout, and they would just off they'd go.
Yeah,
they're
incredible.
All like phenomenally conditioned athletes. It was crazy.
Yeah.
Not all of them. I mean, not all of them were drinking like that, but some of them.
Yeah, but the ones that really drank were so impressive.
What's the most pressure filled situation that's acceptable to use alcohol for to calm your nerves a little bit? Like if you were given like a speech at a wedding or something, I feel like most people would be, I think there are very few people who would say like, okay, unless you're an alcoholic, yeah, it's no big deal. I think most people would say it's no big deal if you have a drink or two to loosen up before you give a best man speech at a wedding.
Oh yeah, for sure. It's definitely all relative to the situation. So you can be like a little loose, a little greased up for a best man speech. I've given three of those.
Wow.
And they all stellar reviews, 3 out of 3, five stars.
And you're probably, it's just like playing darts. You need to be at the right level of
exactly
like 2 or 3 drinks help you with darts versus 7, 8, 9. You're missing the dartboard altogether and you're telling everybody this story about the time the groom hooked up with one of the bridesmaids.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. As is appropriate. but you know, I probably not a job interview. Not maybe not
Oh, that's it. Yeah, the job interview. Depending on the culture of the organization. But even then,
fair.
You want to be sure that it's the guy interviewing you that wants to. That's a tough one. That's a tough one when you're sitting. You know what I hate is when you're at a you're at a lunch or something or a dinner with somebody that's like maybe you're trying to impress or they're a potential client or whatever. I don't like when they ask you first if you want a drink.
Yeah.
I don't, and it's now as I get older, it's not a big deal. But I remember when I was like in my 20s, I used to get really stressed out about that. If somebody's taking me out to lunch and they're like in their 40s and wearing a suit and seem very mature and responsible, like, I have no idea if they're drinkers or not. I'd like a drink, but I don't, they could be teetotalers for all I know.
You get like a virgin daiquiri or a cocktail.
Yeah, that's
exactly. So it's a, you look
nothing,
like
nothing will impress if it's a guy from some company that's like hardcore sales and these guys go out boozing all the time.
Right, you're refined enough to know what a good cocktail is, but you're not going to have the booze because you're a professional.
I think the times that I've gotten in trouble have been with things like, I would say certain legal things and everything where I've gotten nervous. I'm like, just have a drink. I'm just going to have a drink because I'll relax a little bit. And then I can feel like halfway through some lawyer's trying to explain something to me. And I'm like, oh, this is a bad idea. Is it a bad idea to have that drink that was actually probably like three drinks because I poured a pretty tall drink?
Why do I always do explicit document review after an old fashioned?
Yeah. I used to say that about Ryan Mallett. Because Ryan Mallett, there were always rumors when he was coming out of college that he had issues. And who knows if that was fair or not. But when he was in Houston and he had like these repeated issues of, not waking up on time or what have you, I always felt like it would actually be better for him after a point if he did genuinely, like it would be better for him from a higher ability standpoint if he genuinely had an issue, because otherwise he's just an immature jackass. Like if you genuinely have a substance abuse issue, well, that's a real issue. And the great thing about those is you can treat them and you can show that you're going to treatment. You know, the Honey Badger did an incredible job with that. But if you're just a 25-year-old jackass, like people lose patience with quarterbacks real quick if they're just 25-year-old jackasses.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Plus, I mean, everybody loves some kind of redemption story. I think even GMs and managers, they love, because they kind of feel like maybe we're able to explain away whatever deficiencies this player had for a long time.
Yeah.
Through just thinking that like he hasn't been polished. He's just got this minor addiction problem and we can all fix that.
Plus, I mean, there's just so many players there's quite a few players that
just name them, Seth.
It's Tyrann Mathieu. Damn it, I said it was Tyrann Mathieu.
Many more, you know what
Jimmy Smith had his cocaine issues, and he, you know, the funny thing about him though, he came back and he played for a while, and then I don't think he had any trouble with it again until after he was done playing. So he actually kind of crushed it. Some of the players I know that have had issues with either cocaine or stimulants didn't start until after they were done playing, when their lives kind of started going haywire. Like Ted Johnson. Ted Johnson was like a straight arrow when he was playing for the Patriots. Ted Johnson was a linebacker who won 3 Super Bowls with the Patriots. And he was just like Joe Football, you know, like did everything the right way. And when he got done with football, and he'd had a bunch of real bad concussion issues, like playing through concussions his last couple of years, he just went off the rails when he lost all his structure. And he ended up with serious issues. So there's another check on your favorite, by the way, because he did sound like he didn't have the issue when he was a player. Who am I thinking of? What's his name? Josh Gordon. Now, Josh Gordon. Completely
That's right.
Different story. Yeah. Josh Gordon has had a weird go of it. This is a depressing topic. Let's move on to Mike Tomlin.
Got it. Yeah. Something uplifting and exciting and energizing.
This is Brooke Pryor. On this slow football news day, Brooke Pryor from ESPN wrote this story about Mike Tomlin's weird sayings. Apparently he says a whole lot of stuff that's not quite Yogi Berra level, but it sounds very coach speaky. So I wanted to read three of these and see if we could tell what he's trying to say, even if it doesn't quite make sense. Because Yogi Berra would do that sometimes too. Yogi Berra would say things like, well, nobody goes to that restaurant because it's too busy. You know, like,
right.
it's dumb, but it does kind of make sense. Like, okay, yeah. Nobody I know goes to it because it's always packed. It's a pain in the ass.
Well, and there's like the classic that I feel like everyone, we've all heard the coachisms, but there's like the don't mind the horses blind, just load the wagon was one that I had heard a million times. Oh, and that's
never
one
heard
that
before.
You've never heard that?
Don't mind the horses blind. Just so don't worry about that. Almost sounds like, hey, don't worry that your coach is a jackass. Just there, load up.
There's it. It's definitely one of those where don't take a hard look at this one.
Don't worry about where you're going or how you're going to get there.
Yeah,
just
don't worry about
just
the
get
details.
To work.
Just do your job and everything will be fine. Potentially. Like, don't worry about the things you can't control. But yeah. About the metaphor, it's like nonsensical.
That's a really good one, though. I like that. Well, yeah, taken literally, you'd be a moron if you didn't worry about the horse being blind.
Right.
But actually, one of these ones that Tomlin said, if I could find it, is a lot like that, that I like a lot. Don't be patient. Just work while you wait. That's one of those ones where I knew what it meant immediately until I had to try to explain it, and then I had to think about it for a while. That's what it is. Don't be patient. Just work while you wait. So, okay. So like he said that to some practice squad player. So I guess what he's saying is you're going to have to wait, but just because you have to wait doesn't mean you have to be patient. Like, you can keep working, and it's like some things are just flat out going to take time. So you don't get impatient. But if you're going to be impatient, be sure you're actually working and doing something about it.
Well, and I think it's saying, I mean, football does have a fair amount of hurry up and wait in it.
Yeah.
I mean, even when you're on one side of the ball or the other and you're just waiting for, you know, the defense to get off the field or something like that. I mean, it's making use of whatever time you always have, and that you can draw that out to the off season. You can draw it out to, you know, between workouts or anything else. So, I mean, I like that one. I think that's the thumbs up.
This is the one I know that this one I'm torn on. And if it makes you feel any better, a lot of the players in this article, like Ryan Clark, after a couple of these said, like, I don't know what the hell it means. That's Ryan Clark. He speaks professionally for a living.
Right.
We show up in stadiums.
Yeah.
I think that I hear that and I almost think like that's something that a player would say, like when he's saying like, oh, we're talking about practice. It almost feels like, you know, I show up on game day, but he's definitely not saying that. I think he's saying like, we are like, listen, so he'll say to the team, we show up in stadiums. I think we show up in stadiums.
Well, I think what he's saying is they don't shirk from the moment. They don't shirk from the moment. They're there during prime time. They're
if it's
not,
a stadium.
You know, if it's a big moment, they're going to show up. They're there on game day. They're ready to go. Right?
Like you had said, in stadiums, we show up.
He strikes me as one of those kinds of guys that he's doing it with such vigor that it's sort of like almost anything can come out and people are just going to roll with it. They're kind of giving him the benefit of the doubt, which is like the best part of being a coach. I think half of the stuff you say is like garbled nonsense and people just roll with it.
Minka Fitzpatrick, you know what? I think the way that he delivers it, Tomlin delivers it, might have a lot to do with this one, because Minka Fitzpatrick loves this one. And it's pretty basic. Like, I guess Tomlin, instead of saying have a great day, he'll always say make it a great day. So you just wake up with that mentality of, oh, I'm going to make it a great day. I'm not going to hope that I have a great day. I'm not going to have a great day, because that's kind of passive. I'm going to make it a great day, which... okay, that's cool. It's not poster worthy, but I guess as a way of like, if you get in the habit of saying that all the time,
it's a microcosm, right? It's like a microcosm of his specific outlook, and he's trying to impart that on other people that have agency. You know, you're the one that's driving the narrative for you.
Yeah. So that's good. That's good for Minka Fitzpatrick.
Yeah.
Nameless gray faces, which I think what he means there is kind of like, hey, it doesn't matter who the opponent is or any, like, don't get too wrapped up in your opponent. You're playing this other team, and this is what that team does, which is interesting. So I think some coaches really try to personalize the enemy or the opponent, so to speak.
Right.
And really, I've heard that Belichick will kind of like be like, talk about guys with a sneer sometimes, try to really pitch you against somebody. Maybe Tomlin's different. I had a coach, Frank Gantz Sr., who was a special teams coach who was awesome. He was one of the best speakers I've ever had as a coach. Actually, I would say the best speaker in terms of getting up and just He was almost like a popular college professor. Like, people would go to the special teams meetings happily because it was so entertaining. Well, if you weren't on special, like, I had to go for PAT field goal block,
right?
Which, like, you never get yelled at in that. So, you go and you hang out, and I would stick around and watch everybody else because Frank Gant Sr. was so exciting. Now, the guys who are actually on special teams, they got their asses ripped. They were,
yeah, of course,
but. Yeah. He was a Naval Academy guy. He'd been a pilot in the Navy, and he went to the Naval Academy. So he used to talk. It was cool because he was a football coach who could credibly make military analogies without sounding like a complete moron, you know, like without signing a guy.
Yeah.
I had a coach one time show a video. This is a non-military guy. I had a coach show a video of Saving Private Ryan. He showed the landing at D-Day. And after the video, he said, "Men, what you guys are doing tomorrow is no different than what those men on the screen just did."
Oh, no.
Around like, oh, my God. Oh. We're going to get our... No, this is not appropriate, sir.
No, it's not. We're Cornell, sir.
Yeah. No, this is a pro guy. So I think that it was cool when Gantz would do it, because Gantz would show all these Navy SEAL training videos, and he was big into boxing. So, like, when he would teach tackling and hitting, he would show boxers and how they use the same arm, same leg to deliver a blow and all this stuff. But he would also always talk about how you're not facing the Cleveland Browns, you're facing the Cleveland Targets. You know, you're not, and then the individuals too. Like, you know, what's his name? I don't care. What's the score? Who gives a damn? Like, we're facing the targets. We're going to take these targets down. So I think that's what I thought when he said nameless gray faces. It's almost like you just like dehumanize the opponent.
Did you find that? Is that situational though? Because I always felt like coaches would pull out those kinds of references whenever you were facing an opponent that you were generally expected to get stomped by. That was usually how it always went down for us. So if you were playing someone that you were a three touchdown, like they were favored
underdog,
three touchdowns, yeah, you were an underdog, then it was going to get probably pretty ugly potentially early. So they were going to do everything they could to not get you fixated on the fact that this was Alabama if you're in college, or, you know, if you're having a rough season like, you know, we were when we were 2-14, you're getting towards the end of the year. They're just like, don't even worry about it being Peyton Manning over there. Don't even think about it. It's nobody. It's not Peyton Manning.
So that's like,
just a guy. It's just a guy.
Yeah, but Tomlin definitely, like, they're not in that mode,
obviously. Yeah, right.
Like,
right,
they're not going into it. They're not.
Yeah.
It's the Steelers. Right. They're not going into it. That
that's fair.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of the Steelers, I remember we did that. Which coach did that? It was Capers, I guess. Oh, yeah. When the Steelers came to town in September.
Oh, I remember.
In 2000.
And we decided to keep the roof open and put us on the...
Because we kept it. Brilliant. Because we'd been used to the heat. And meanwhile, by the way, I don't know if we'd ever... We'd practiced more in the bubble that training camp than we ever had before. I didn't really feel prepared for the heat. And we're like, well, this is a Northern team coming down, and we're gonna take advantage of the heat. And at the time, I was like, cool, I'm fine with that. The Steelers opened up with like a 12-14 play drive. Robert Smith got hurt. I think Gary Walker was already out on the defensive line.
Yeah.
It was just, we were screwed. And it was one of those things that, okay, I could see if you pull that against a less disciplined team or something, but it's the Pittsburgh freaking Steelers. Like, they're always... Those guys are always in shape. They're always prepared. Like, even in their down years, they still draft a certain kind of tough guy, you know? And it was in September, so they'd already at least been through some heat. When some of the Northern teams go to play in the South in, like, late October and November, that's when they're not ready for the heat, because they've been practicing in like 65, 70 degree weather for a month or so. Then it jumps up and bites them.
But yeah, it was the season opener and they had been in camp. It's not like they were practicing indoors the entire time. And on top of that, I remember clearly that we opened the stadium and they were on the shady side, and we were the ones that were under the sun.
Yeah.
And it was just brutal. Like, we were just getting completely beaten down by the sun.
Oh, so that was that the 2-14 season?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That makes sense then. That's how we started it off. Oh gosh, that what a blur that was. Okay, so this is the one. This is the one that I think makes total sense that Tomlin says, and yet it doesn't make sense unless you put some thought into it. And this is the one that Ryan Clark said, quote, "No one knows what the hell that truly means sometimes. It's such a broad thing," unquote. This is what Tomlin will say. "The standard is the standard. The standard is the standard."
I was waiting for a follow-up.
Doesn't it have a very like Michael Jordan, the roof is the ceiling feeling to it? Like that.
Yes.
Have you heard that one? Did you hear when Michael Jordan said the ceiling is the roof? No, he said the ceiling is the roof.
Yes.
The ceiling is the roof.
I agree with both.
Like,
yes.
I think what he was trying to say was the ceiling is like, hey, the only thing that constrain you is whatever.
Yeah. So the it's all words are only a construct.
I think what this means is that what he's really saying is that like the gold standard is the standard. So like whatever the standard is, like if we look at, hey, what's the standard for a good rushing attack or what's the standard for a good pass rush or something, that's our standard. Like you don't even have to think about it. Like our standards are like the pinnacle of whatever the standard is.
I mean, the most charitable reading of that is he still left out like four words. That's not.
Yeah,
he did.
And
you can't.
At you like,
there's an asterisk on that, and you have to reference the bottom of the page, and then it explains that he meant the Steelers standard is the standard, the gold standard that we set. It that doesn't make sense.
Have you heard that one before? The standard.
No,
is the standard?
No, I haven't heard that. That's a thumbs down.
What's your least favorite coach saying? Coach speak saying.
Oh, I used to loathe whenever they would say give 110%.
Yeah,
I mean, pretty much anybody who says that it's such a cliche, and it also doesn't make sense. And it's like it's just so like it's so worn.
Well, and especially if you really, I mean, because that coach, if he really wants the best out of you, I mean, 120%. Come on.
Yeah, exactly. It's like that's like, a slippery coach. It's a slippery slope. Like, how high do we want to go? Like, if we're doing made up numbers, like just run this thing all the way to the ground.
I talked myself into saying that there was some logic to saying give 110% because. No coach that says it is actually meaning this, but if what you mean is give 110% of your previous best effort. So, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, come on.
Sure, why not?
Like, roll with that. Give it 110%. Like if you ran 19 miles an hour before, then run 19.
Yeah, do
five,
the math on that.
Five.
Yeah. Like, do the math.
It would be, wait a second.
It'd be like over 40 more 19. Bits.
So it'd be 20.9 to miles per hour. Let's go 20.9 miles per hour on it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I mean, you know, like, Dave and I used to joke about this all the time. Dave Anderson, who, I mean, you obviously know. I know he was on your other show all the time. And we would just consistently, I mean, there were coaches that we were there, like Brian Periani, who was just guilty of doing this all the time, of just like the obscene coachisms that nobody was actually motivated by.
Yeah.
And so we just turned into anytime he would do it, he would just turn and he would just say, he's like, you know what? You just don't want to be left in a room without a stool to stand on. And you just go, that tracks. That tracks. I don't. Am I changing a light bulb or what's the...
Why do I need a stool to stand on?
And so he would, you know, and the one that we would say, you know, it's all just whether you win or lose, it's all just pennies to peanuts.
That doesn't.
And I was like, I don't think that even.
It up,
do they convert
something that he heard?
And we got Joe Buck to say that on a Monday night game, actually.
How'd you do that? Did David Anderson know Joe Buck? David Anderson like knows so many people like that would seemingly be above his pay grade.
It's really amazing.
It must be one of the most. For those of you who don't know, David Anderson was a receiver for the Texans, and where else did he play?
He was in Washington.
Yeah,
I think for a little while he's with the Redskins. I think Denver too for a minute there.
You know what? Speaking of conversion rate, the other one that I've read a couple of these articles, and I can't figure it out. But it's a player that just agreed to a new contract. Oh, it's Russell Okung, and he's big into bitcoins. So news. It made news that he wanted part of his salary to be paid in bitcoin. So now they're going to pay part of his salary in bitcoin. And I guess that maybe I need to learn a little bit more about Bitcoin, but like I understand that I understand it's a currency, but like I don't understand like why can't he just get paid and then convert it himself into Bitcoin? This is like being demanding to be paid in French francs or something, or is the conversion process a lot more complex than I am catching on to here?
So that's exactly what I was wondering when I read it. Is I was trying to figure out, is all he I mean, all he's really doing is eliminating whatever the, I guess, perceived pain of having to do it himself.
Yeah.
Because, like, I mean, it's really, all they're going to do is take the percentage and do it themselves and convert it, right? And then just purchase the Bitcoin.
Yeah. It doesn't make any sense. It's because, and if anything, I'm guessing if he's into cryptocurrency, he thinks he's a genius that can play the arbitrage and everything. And they're like, I would think that he would think that the Carolina Panthers aren't going to do a good as good a job of timing the cryptocurrency conversions as he would. Okay, well, here we go. All right, let's see. According to The Verge, the headline isn't true. Not accurate, an NFL spokesperson tells me, adding that his people are converting some of the money into Bitcoin after he gets paid in U.S. dollars, just like every other NFL team. I don't know. Oh, now I'm pissed. I get the cryptocurrency stuff pisses me off. And I say that. No, I know that I'm upsetting a bunch of people. And I'm admittedly speaking out of my league here because I understand the scarcity of it that creates value amongst it. And I know that gold or platinum or anything else doesn't actually have any inherent value either. But it bothers me and annoys me that at some level there, it's just still. You remember how I said, like, I got pissed off that, like, people that get rich growing marijuana when it's illegal think that they're going to be able to make the same kind of money when it's legal. Like, no, it's not going to be like that. Yeah. It just becomes a commodity. Yeah. At some point, just because it's a cryptocurrency doesn't change the fact that, okay, it's like any other currency. It's volatile at times. It'll skyrocket at other times.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Having said that, I think some people have gotten, like, super, super, super rich on it.
Well, I guess
laugh at me all you want. I'm admitting my ignorance here.
Well, they got in early and they purchased like the appropriate amount of, I guess, you know, the computers that you need to be able to use the algorithm to create the cryptocurrency. And it was a shorter time cycle, I think, to be able to create it. And so they were able to get in relatively early. And now you need, you know, warehouses full of the
What's to prevent us from creating our own cryptocurrency? Like, nothing. For me to say, like, hey, this is really scarce. There's only so many of these out there. And I've got, but I would do, like, I don't want to have to write a computer program to have people come mining for it.
Well, then maybe creating a cryptocurrency isn't for you.
I want to turn people into unwilling or unknowing, like, currency holders or bearers. Like, I'll turn
unknowing.
I'll turn it into a huge scavenger hunt where it turns almost into, like, I'll plant the currency on somebody and then you got to go figure out a way to get it from that person. Or maybe I'll create a currency, but the people I give it to aren't allowed to use it. I'll pay them to guard the currency. And then it's up to you to figure out how to get the currency from them.
Yeah, I like that plan. I think it's creative. I think it's bold.
Yeah.
I think you sound like an entrepreneur. I think you got a good head on your shoulders. I think, or you can have, you know, I can sell someone some cryptocurrency and then they get two people to buy some more cryptocurrency and then they get two people. And then before you know it,
you have
an army of people buying my cryptocurrency.
It's not a pyramid scheme. It's multi-level marketing.
No. It's a cryptocurrency scheme.
It's not a pyramid scheme. It's multiple levels that go upward in a triangle.
Yeah, they get narrow at the top where I am.
In the shape of a pyramid. Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's a dollar sign.
No. Okay. So this is the other thing that bothered me this week. This is the other big news in a slow news week. This guy, Rick Carl from WVTM 13. In Birmingham, of course, or somewhere in Alabama. He put.
Why'd you say,
on,
of course?
Well, because this is about Nick Saban and Rick Carl, who's covered Alabama forever. He says something's been eating at me for about 13 years. Okay, so he's been 13 years, and it came to light. Because that was when Saban got there. It came to light again today as I listened to Coach Saban's pre-Rose Bowl news conference, which was held virtually today. Blah 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 blah. You see, I have a problem with reporters addressing Coach Saban as Nick when asking the coach a question if they don't know him well. I have heard this since the coach arrived in Tuscaloosa in 2007. Questions like, Nick, can you tell me about the progression of your quarterback? Today, I even heard a young reporter get on the call and start her question with, hi, Saban. Yes, it could have been the nerves of a young reporter, and it totally was. I mean, like, she was, you know, that poor girl. People are terrified. I say girl because I assume she was a college kid from the, so that poor young woman. She's probably petrified. It's terrifying right. interviewing somebody like Saban or Belichick.
Especially Saban, of all people.
Yeah, yeah. Like, and it's not, and like, it doesn't matter who it yeah. is. Like, experienced reporters sometimes will get petrified of guys like Saban. But this guy is requesting of all media members, no matter who you are, unless you're like a close personal friend of Nick Saban, to address him as Coach Saban. Because frankly, after all, I think the man has earned that much respect. Where do you stand on having to afford the football coach the respect of calling him by coach?
Well, I mean, I think as a matter of just to make things simple for everyone, it kind of makes sense, because it might be a little weird calling anyone by their first name if you've never actually been introduced. It, like, that can be just awkward. So it yeah. might just be easier, just as a matter of protocol, to always call them Coach Saban. But like, on a deeper level, I feel like of all the problems that we have right now, I don't think like not affording enough respect to famous rich people is one of them. So like, it's okay. You didn't offend his sensibilities. He'll be fine. Yeah. It's not a big deal. Like, we don't need to like idolize people to the extent that it's an insult.
The point that this guy brings up and a bunch of other people bring up is that, hey, in Alabama, Bear Bryant is known as Coach Bryant. Like, all right, well, great. Yeah. He played in a different, like, he wore a suit on the sidelines. Yeah, it was a more formal time. Yeah. Things were different then. People wore suits in this, well, SEC, they still do. But, like, adults wore suits in the stands. It was a different time. Yeah. It's more casual now. That was one of my favorite things about the NFL, was when I got to an age where I felt like I could, you know, I called the coaches by their first name. Like, I was I don't even remember what it happened. I guess it was when I got to Houston, because I'd called Dom Capers when he was my defensive coordinator. I would never call Tom Coughlin Tom. Some other guys did, but they had bigger balls.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, yeah. But that's standard in the NFL. A lot of guys just call the coach by the first name.
I never got to that level. I remember Mike Flanagan used to call Sherman. You'd just call him Sherm, or he could call him Mike. And there was a plane of existence that I never even saw anywhere in my field of view.
Do you think Johnny Manziel called? I bet Johnny Manziel had like little pet nicknames for his coaches, because he's agreeing to resume his playing career with a startup league called Fan Controlled Football. He told ESPN this week. So ESPN comes out with this article. It's a league that's scheduled to begin in February. It feels like three straight years that Manziel's been playing in some offshoot league. Like, he wasn't in the XFL, but he was in the AAF. He was in one before that, wasn't he? He was whatever. Oh, yeah, he was in some independent league in Texas that was only a few weekends long.
The WNBA.
This is going to be four teams, each of which will have celebrity owners, including Richard Sherman, who's interesting, Austin Eckler, the retired Marshawn Lynch. So they got some heavy hitters as part owners. Other owners include hip-hop artist Quavo, boxer Mike Tyson, and that comedian, something Menery. I didn't write down his name, but it's going to be 7-on-7. It's only going to be a few weeks long, and they're going to be super, super. Oh, it's a 6-week schedule with games live streamed on Twitch from a league leased facility in Atlanta. The games will last about an hour. The field's going to be 50 by 35, and they're going to try to get they're going to try to really make social media a big part of it and let Johnny be Johnny. They're not going to tell him, oh yeah, the CFL, he's banned from the CFL, right? He was in the CFL for a while and still very mysterious. Nobody knows what happened, but he's not allowed to go back to the CFL.
Yeah, what? That's still a mystery. Like, what exactly happened there? He was just kicked out of the whole country.
I don't know.
And now he's run out of leagues, essentially, to join.
I know from Roberto Osuna was a reliever for the Astros who had some legal issues up in Toronto with domestic abuse. And I know it was very, very hard to get any information from the Canadian legal system. They keep everything very, very private. So I don't think Manziel was anything near. I'm not hinting that Manziel was into anything like Osuna was accused of.
You're speculating that he hit a woman is what you're saying.
No, stop that. Stop
That's it. What it seems like you're saying.
Shut your dirty mouth. No, but I do wonder, like, if you got in any trouble or like maybe like the privacy laws, it seems like the media doesn't even try to dig into a lot of stuff up there is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You're just I think certain things aren't allowed. So if it was some kind of transgression on the team, nobody's leaking it and we won't find out. But here he's going to be encouraged to just be Johnny. I feel though, I feel like he might be a lot more boring than he used to be. I feel like now that he's actually like being set free, I think he's got his meds right and everything, and he's living kind of a quiet life. And I don't know if he's going to be.
I don't know, Seth. I mean, like the Phoenix rises from the ashes. I feel like Johnny Manziel is the kind of guy that once he gets a little bit of notoriety, it's just all going to fall right back.
Like Mickey Rourke and The Wrestler.
Yes. Yeah. 100%. Yeah, like, oh. I mean, once he gets it just seems like that's the common denominator with every time he exits someplace, he gets there. It seems like, hey, you know, I've been reading that he's been training nonstop for the last 6 months and he was there for 2 weeks.
That's what Mickey Rourke did in The Wrestler. He got himself in great shape.
He did.
Hey, spoiler alert real quick. If anybody hasn't seen The Wrestler, I'll do this in less than a minute. You can fast forward and I'll be done in 1 minute starting right now. But the part in The Wrestler, when he's in the bathroom at that bar and starts doing coke, and you know that he's already had heart issues by that point, right? You're just like, you can see it coming. That's like some of the most uncomfortable, like it's a certain type of discomfort that I felt in the theater watching that scene that I can't even quite place, like just watching impending disaster on this guy and how everything's all gone wrong. Oh my gosh.
What a movie that goes on the list of great movies that I'll probably never watch again.
Because it's just too hard to watch.
It's just rough. I mean, that is a hard watch.
It's like the Scott's Tots episode of The Office.
It's exactly like that.
Kind of different, but yeah, I can't watch that again. Because, okay, 4, 3, 2, 1.
He dies.
We're done. Yeah. Stop it.
Sorry.
That was 1 second past 1 minute. That was Sean.
I thought you were doing like the 3, 2, 1, 0. Go.
Yeah. Now I'm trying to figure out the, it was 10% of a minute, whatever it was. All right, man. I got to go figure out which scores I'm going to allow showed during the Texans game on Sunday.
Wait, which what?
Which scores I'm going to allow to be shown in the house during the Texans game on Sunday. Just like the Colts are doing.
Oh, okay. I was like, is this real? Are you really not being
honest? Oh, no.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.